Chapter 34. The fascists held the crests of the hills here. Then there was a valley that no one held except for a fascist post in a farmhouse with its outbuildings and its barn that they had fortified. Andres, on his way to Goltz with the message from Robert Jordan, made a wide circle around this post in the dark. He knew where there was a tripwire laid that fired a set gun, and he located it in the dark, stepped over it, and started along the small stream bordered with poplars whose leaves were moving with the night wind. A cock crowed at the farmhouse that was the fascist post, and as he walked along the stream he looked back and saw, through the trunks of the poplars, a light showing at the lower edge of one of the windows of the farmhouse. The night was quiet and clear, and Andres left the stream and struck across the meadow. There were four haycocks in the meadow that had stood there ever since the fighting in July of the year before. No one had ever carried the hay away, and the four seasons that had passed had flattened the cocks and made the hay worthless. Andres thought what a waste it was as he stepped over a tripwire that ran between two of the haycocks. But the Republicans would have had to carry the hay up the steep Guadarrama slope that rose beyond the meadow, and the fascists did not need it, I suppose, he thought. They have all the hay they need, and all the grain. They have much, he thought. But we will give them a blow tomorrow morning. Tomorrow morning we will give them something for Sordo. What barbarians they are. But in the morning there will be dust on the road. He wanted to get this message taken over and be back for the attack on the posts in the morning. Did he really want to get back, though? Or did he only pretend he wanted to be back? He knew the reprieved feeling he had felt when the Inglés had told him he was to go with the message. He had faced the prospect of the morning calmly. It was what was to be done. He had voted for it and would do it. The wiping out of Sordo had impressed him deeply. But after all, that was Sordo. That was not them. What they had to do, they would do. But when the Inglés had spoken to him of the message, he had felt the way he used to feel when he was a boy, and he had wakened in the morning of the festival of his village and heard it raining hard so that he knew that it would be too wet and that the bull baiting in the square would be canceled. He loved the bull baiting when he was a boy, and he looked forward to it and to the moment when he would be in the square in the hot sun and the dust with the carts ranged all around to close the exits and to make a closed place into which the bull would come, sliding down out of his box, breaking with all 4 feet when they pulled the end gate up. He looked forward with excitement, delight, and sweating fear to the moment when, in the square, he would hear the clatter of the bull's horns knocking against the wood of his traveling box, and then the sight of him as he came, sliding, breaking out into the square, his head up, his nostrils wide, his ears twitching, dust in the sheen of his black hide, dried crut splashed on his flanks, watching his eyes set wide apart, unblinking eyes under the widespread horns, as smooth and solid as driftwood polished by the sand, the sharp tips up-tilted, so that to see them did something to your heart. He looked forward all the year to that moment when the bull would come out into the square on that day, when you watched his eyes while he made his choice of whom in the square he would attack, in that sudden, head-lowering, horn-reaching, quick cat gallop that stopped your heart dead when it started. He had looked forward to that moment all the year when he was a boy. But the feeling when the Inglés gave the order about the message was the same as when you woke to hear the reprieve of the rain falling on the slate roof against the stone wall and into the puddles on the dirt street of the village. He had always been very brave with the bull in those village capeas, as brave as any in the village, or of the other nearby villages, and not for anything would he have missed it any year, although he did not go to the capeas of other villages. He was able to wait still when the bull charged, and only jumped aside at the last moment. He waved a sack under his muzzle to draw him off when the bull had someone down, and many times he had held and pulled on the horns when the bull had someone on the ground and pulled sideways on the horn, had slapped and kicked him in the face until he left the man to charge someone else. He had held the bull's tail to pull him away from a fallen man, bracing hard and pulling and twisting. Once he had pulled the tail around with one hand until he could reach a horn with the other, and when the bull had lifted his head to charge him, he had run backwards, circling with the bull, holding the tail in one hand and the horn in the other, until the crowd had swarmed onto the bull with their knives and stabbed him. In the dust and the heat, the shouting, the bull and man and wine smell, He had been the first of the crowd that threw themselves onto the bull, and he knew the feeling when the bull rocked and bucked under him, and he lay across the withers with one arm locked around the base of the horn and his hand holding the other horn tight. His fingers locked as his body tossed and wrenched, and his left arm felt as though it would tear from the socket while he lay on the hot, dusty, bristly, tossing slope of muscle, the ear clenched tight in his teeth, and drove his knife again and again and again into the swelling, tossing bulge of the neck that was now spouting hot on his fist as he let his weight hang on the high slope of the withers and banged into the neck.